you lost a survivor and you're feeling down, David and Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why Blank lost. And this is why Blank lost. Oh baby, this is why Blank lost.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Why Blank Lost. I'm David Bloomberg, and this week I lost my winner pick, who was voted out, at least in part, by the guy I almost chose as my winner pick. But joining me, as always, is a woman who lost her winner pick the first night, Jessica Lewis.
Listen, do we have to go back there? Can I just bask in the glory that you lost your winner pick this week? So unfair.
Two weeks after you did, you mean?
Oh, of course, we have to go back to that again. Listen, I have to say, I thought I was in a good place. I thought you were in a good place, too. I defended your choice when you made it, and now here we are.
That's right. That's right. That just shows how good we are.
I know. We're so bad at this. We did terrible last season. We did terrible again this season. But what can we do? We have to forge ahead.
That's right. And, you know, I think we've kind of buried the lead here because the most important thing was that the Magic 8-Ball was wrong.
You know what? I was sitting on my couch wanting so badly to start tweeting about the fact that I had a good shot. I was feeling like that comeback from behind. And then suddenly Kellen was going to tribal council. And I was thinking, wow, this might actually work. No, I was wrong.
I was getting worried.
I was excited
so much. Well, you know, I thing is, my draft team, not the one that I'm in with you, but a different one that, you know, has Kellen, Bradley and Brendan on it. So I knew I was in deep trouble going into tribal council.
Yeah, you were in a bad spot.
I was not coming out fully intact there.
Yeah, I was really hoping because she was getting a lot of content and the whole Ghost Island thing. And I didn't want to tweet about it because I thought I'm going to ruin it for myself in case it actually happens. And then I should have just tweeted about it. And then I could have blamed it on that I ruined it for myself.
Yes, it went back in time. Your tweet
Yes. But anyway, so such is life. But I do have my Magic 8-Ball with me today. And I did ask it again for predictions because I thought, why the hell not? This is such an unpredictable season. I'm just going to throw the Magic 8-Ball in there and see what happens.
If at first you don't succeed, try again.
Exactly.
Right?
And I'm telling you, I'm not going to spoil anything yet, but I went and I asked it multiple times, multiple questions, and it kept giving me the same response. I'm not even joking.
Said the same thing you said. I don't know. So.
No, I will explain when we get to our predictions, which is, of course, you know, my favorite part.
Yes, well, we've got a little ways to go before we get there. And
we have a lot of ways to go before we get there. Absolutely.
Yes, so a quick reminder that we will be going through my Survivor rules to see what Brendan did right and wrong. And you can find those rules at robhasawebsite.com/survivor rules. And the most up-to-date version should be posted, hopefully by the time you are listening to these words. So as we move along towards, you know, the end, which is clearly the Magic 8-Ball.
Of course.
Yes. I do want to preface before heading to the rules. You know, Jeff Probst told Josh Wigler, Brendan didn't do anything wrong. He just ended up on the wrong side of the numbers.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yes. And, you know, Jeff Probst says that a lot. And I almost always end up disagreeing with him. I guess I could immediately disagree by saying that, you know, Brendan wasn't able to get that last ball on the rails in the challenge, but that would be a pretty cheap way to do it. So I'll withhold judgment for now until we go through all the rules and we figure out why Brendan lost.
Your winner pick.
Yes, my winner pick. Why my winner pick lost.
I have to.
Yes. So normally, we would, of course, begin with the first rule, but this week it seems more appropriate to start with the seventh rule, which talks about how to get and use idols and advantages. And while Brendan himself didn't have an idol, he was obviously a tight ally with Michael, who did, and they planned together about the best way to use it. And also at Tribal Council, Brendan's life in the game came down to whether or not it was used correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But before we even get to that, I do want to mention that Brendan did actually have a plan to look for idols even back before the swap. He said in a web confessional that he helped institute a lockdown on looking for idols at the time, and said if anyone were to break that lockdown, they would immediately become a target, which we saw with your winner pick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. he did plan to look. He just knew he had to be very careful so he wasn't caught. And, you know, we'll talk more about that lockdown when we get to the first rule. But I wanted to mention it here because it shows that he was thinking about idols, both from the standpoint of making sure other people didn't get them and also in terms of getting one himself.
Yes. And then he did also speak about how when they all started looking for idols, it was at a point in the game where he said basically the Navidi Five, it would almost be silly for them to think that we aren't going to be looking for idols at this point. So it was kind of like at that point, groupthink was everybody look together at the same time. So he definitely was willing to change that up as the game progressed because he knew that's what they needed to do.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So getting back to Michael and his idol, although this is why Brendan lost, not why Michael lost. You know, since the episode aired, obviously there has been a lot of discussion about whether he did the right thing with the idol. It's been on podcasts, social media, you name it. And, you know, frankly, the original Malolo were fighting an uphill battle with the idol, and I'm not sure that anything we will discuss here in the next few minutes would have ended up working any better. But I will say that I don't think naming Bradley out loud as their target was a good idea.
That was a horrible idea.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, it really was.
And we'll see. I suspect you have the same reasons that I do, but you know, the thing is, why does anyone have an incentive to flip if only Bradley is at risk? Because, yes, you know, like Ali said on the recap show, the votes at Tribal Council change maybe 5% of the time, which, you know, as listeners know, is something I always preach. You know, live tribals are more an advertising tool than a reality. And votes were even less likely to change once everyone knew that they were personally safe because only Bradley was in danger.
And the thing is, oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I just want to cite to our fearless leader, Rob, who said on the Know-It-Alls, it's basically telling the original Naviti, if you're wrong, you will lose the most annoying member of your tribe.
Right. Yeah. And the whole process of even going into it, there was a lot of things that were referenced in his exit interviews about whether or not he could have done anything differently in that making that decision and leading up to it. And he had expressed that Bradley almost had everybody kind of on a lockdown where you couldn't get a moment alone with very many members of Navidi to really try to talk to them about this. I know we saw one scene or one part of the show. I think it might have it aired. I can't even remember. I've seen so many videos. But they tried to talk to Desiree. Mike talked to Desiree about whether or not she would consider kind of flipping. So it was like they thought about it, but I don't know if they really thought about it enough, if that makes sense. Because
yeah,
I feel like you have time before Tribal Council. I know a lot of things happen, but there was the part of their plan was naming Bradley. Stephanie Johnson mentioned it in one of her web confessionals that was part of the plan, was to say, we're all voting for Bradley. That's the wrong way to walk into that situation, by naming your target. And that was something that they could have dealt with prior to going to Tribal Council. It didn't involve necessarily having to sway anybody ahead of time or talk to people ahead of time. It was just determining, we aren't going to tell them who our target is going to be and let them sweat it out.
Yeah, that's definitely one way. I do think the video you're talking about was a web video, if my memory is correct. And yeah, there's so many different ways they could have played it. And RHAP patron Mark Paris started a discussion in the patron Facebook group about the way Michael played the idol. And there were, you know, a lot of good points made there. And at the end of that discussion, my conclusion is I'm not sure there was a good way to do anything. But I think if I'd been there, knowing what I know about how people are locked in at tribal council almost all the time, mm-hmm. I'd have tried something beforehand, even though, you know, there was something of a lockdown. You know, now, would it have worked? I don't know. Brendan, right. You know, Brendan talked in interviews about various problems with doing it that way, such as losing the element of surprise and giving them too much time to strategize in opposition. And you just mentioned you can't really get a group of them together. So maybe you only talk to one and then, you know, they're going to talk to other people. And then Shannon Gates also pointed out in the Facebook discussion that there's a greater chance that Naviti would ask to see the note to call Michael's double protection bluff, which that was all Michael's idea anyway. Right. So I don't think the rest of his group knew that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, if you tell them at tribal, you could just say, well, I'm not going to go through the whole note, but here's what it says. Whereas if you're at camp, they're going to say, let me see that note.
Well, and here's the thing. What they could have even done is if they had been having this discussion before going to tribal, I don't even know if talking about the power of the idol in that fashion would have benefited them if they had this discussion before going to tribal. Because just the idea of an idol is scary enough. And the fact that he has one to play could potentially start making them question, well, who are they going to be voting for? And there's one thing that Brendan did say about idols before he even played this game. And he said that they add an element of uncertainty. And uncertainty is going to be my currency out there. And I think that that was a great read on how to actually play an idol. It is that idea that you don't know. You don't know who the other people will be voting for. You don't know who could potentially have an idol. You don't know who the idol is going to be played for. And that could have been utilized more to their benefit. It's just having it. And the two-person story, well, it was very creative and fantastically well said at Tribal Council. It wasn't necessary before going into Tribal Council. It would have been great to even add that at Tribal Council if you wanted to go that route. But the discussions beforehand to try to get somebody to flip, like Sebastian, who is strong, he's very much like Mike and Brendan in the way that he's playing the game. He's someone that I feel like they could have talked to beforehand and tried to work with and use that. Bradley doesn't want strong guys in this game. You're a strong guy. Let's talk kind of mentality before you walk into Tribal Council. I don't know. There were other things that could have been done. Would it have worked? I have no idea.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it sounds like they considered doing it before and they didn't think that would work. But the interviews also made it sound like, well, they really didn't think it would work at Tribal Council either. But, you know, it was like a 2% chance versus a 1% chance type of thing, you know.
Right.
One thing that, you know, happened was obviously Michael had to choose who to use the idol on. And I can't fault him for the logic he used in the absence of any information from Brendan, because he knew people frequently don't vote out the actual main target, but rather a lieutenant of the target.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in his mind, the original Naviti wouldn't go after himself or Brendan, but Stephanie would be likely. However, Michael should have listened to Brendan's reasons for why he thought it was going to be him. The original Naviti knew that people frequently target the lieutenant, so they double bluffed and went for a main target instead while throwing off signals that it would be Stephanie. And, you know, it's like in poker, thinking on higher levels. I know that you know that I know, so I'm going to do the opposite of what you know I would normally be doing.
Did you write that down? Because that's pretty creative.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to. I'd have too many no's if I didn't, you know, have that written down. Yeah. We saw Michael and Brendan talking before they revealed the idol to the rest of their allies, and they were on the right track to figure out what the Naviti were doing and that they wouldn't care about strength. Brendan even told Michael, I think it's coming my way.
Yeah.
And Michael just didn't follow through. And, you know, it does indeed sound like Brendan knew it was going to be him. We'll talk about why when we get to the first rule. But it wasn't just a case of him saying something in the interviews afterwards and people going, oh, yeah, right, you knew.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Brendan talked about how he had hoped certain parts of that tribal council would have been aired because they showed that he knew he was on the chopping block.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did see was Michael whispering to Brendan, I think it's Stephanie. And when you look at Brendan in that moment, let's just say he looks less than convinced about that.
Yeah. And that's the one thing he did say in his exit interviews, that if he could have done anything differently, it was doing a better job of telling Michael that it was coming to me. And I do think that that's one of those moments where it's sometimes in the game you can have blinders on and you can be so convinced that something is happening. And trust me, I've been there. So I've had those blinders on. I know exactly what it's like when
someone is not voting for me. I don't know what you're talking about.
It was a horrible moment.
It's crazy.
But I also, you do that because you've made determinations about relationships that you have with other people. And in this situation, you have someone who is your number one ally, who is telling you, listen, this is what's happening. I was talking to Kellen, and this is what happened when I talked to Kellen, where she got a tear in her eye when I mentioned my potential, you know, going home the day before my birthday. And I think in that type of situation, that's when you do need to listen to your closest ally, who is telling you, this is what's happening. This is what you need to do. They're voting for me. It wasn't like someone was coming at him from the other tribe or from the other side, if you will. From Navidi telling him, this is what we're doing, and you're questioning whether or not they're being truthful with you. This is coming from the guy that you're playing the game with the hardest, and he's your number one. He's your ride or die.
Yeah, and you know, I was going to talk about this in the first rule, but it could go in either. I mean, it's scheming and plotting, but it's scheming and plotting about the idol. But yeah, I came to the same conclusion, which is, you know, he basically said in interviews, okay, it's Michael's idol. He didn't want to be too pushy about how it should be used. But looking back, I think Brendan needed to be pushy, like you said.
He needed to be, because Michael was locked in. And even Michael said that part of his ploy was going to be throwing out names at tribal council to gauge reactions. So he was going to pull a Joe Mina, I guess. But when he did that, it was, you say Brendan and myself, like he basically says Michael and Brendan at the same time. So you're naming two people and then you have to gauge people's reaction. And did Bradley make a face from what we saw? Sure. But it wasn't, I don't think that that's going to be enough of a reason for you to then switch and say, now, no, I'm going to vote for Stephanie, because he was going to play it for Stephanie. He had already kind of made up his mind. So I don't think Michael was in the right mindset at that moment to be reading the room, if you will, and trying to guess. That needed to be a read that he was getting from Brendan.
Yeah. And actually, that's the same conclusion I came to, which is, if he wasn't willing to listen to Brendan, or he just thought Brendan was wrong or paranoid or just wanted to use it for himself, then I think the most ideal way for him to have played the idol was, don't say anything to the Naviti pre-vote. Let everybody go up there and vote. Everybody thinks it's locked in 5-4. Then stand up and give the story. Name a name that he claims to be saving, just like Joe, and watch the reactions the way Joe did last season. And yeah, he might not have people who have quite as expressive a face, but you know, at least the Naviti wouldn't have had time to brace themselves, and he would have had a better chance of getting the reaction he was looking for, which he could have acted on.
Right.
Because he gave them too much time to basically set themselves, compose themselves.
I mean, did you see everyone's reaction when he pulled out the idol? And of course, I'm sure you saw it when he pulled out the idol and then started to say that it was for two people. Everybody's face was it was great. Like, though Bradley, Kellen, and Desiree's like reactions to that was phenomenal. So he would have gotten a reaction if he had saved it. And this is one of those moments in Survivor where sometimes you do have to kind of hide your cards. Don't show everything you have, and try to work on Sebastian before you go to tribal council. Don't necessarily tell him you have an idol and someone else is going to go home, because then you do get those genuine moments, like the moment he pulled out the idol and started talking about how he could save two people. You get that genuine reaction. So I do think if he had waited, that would have been a good play.
Yeah. So that's, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about Michael, even though it's, you know, Brendan that we're really talking about. But now we can go ahead and move into the first rule, which we've already sort of started talking about when it comes to the the scheming and plotting in terms of how Brendan should have pushed Michael to use the idol on him. And I'll just, you know, follow that up, or really put a bow on what you've already said, which was, you know, Michael didn't think the Navidi would target one of the strong guys, but he didn't listen to what Brendan was saying, which was that the Navidi had no reason to care if they kept losing challenges, because they'll just keep picking off the original Malolos.
Right.
So I guess Brendan just needed to find a way to be more persuasive. And, you know, I can't sit here and say exactly what would have been the best way to approach it, but he was your closest ally.
Right.
And that was his only hope of staying. So he needed to be more pushy there.
Yeah. And you know what's interesting is in the tribal council in the last episode, one of the questions that Jeff Probst asked Brendan was specifically about him being okay because he had strength. Because of his strength, he was okay. And Brendan even said, this is not about physical strength. Days of strength right. are over in Survivor. So there was already this built-in idea that the Navidi doesn't care how strong I am. They don't care how strong the four of us are because they're sticking together. So I do really think that that was a moment that Brendan really needed to, he needed to push. He definitely needed to push Michael.
Yeah. Now, as we look at the rest of this rule, you know, overall scheming and plotting, I think he did quite well, especially in his original tribe. What do you think?
Oh, I think he did fantastic. And one of the quotes that I came across that came from Stephen Fishbeck, which I thought was wonderful. You have to know your type and play against it, which I thought was fun because Brendan knew his type coming into this game, and he actually didn't play against it. He played into it once he saw he had to, which I thought was, he said it was a split second decision that he had to make when they were standing on the mats in that moment when they needed to determine who their leader was going to be. And he looked at the group of people he was with, and he's at least 15 years older than all of them. And he understood immediately he was kind of the dad figure. He was the older guy. And if he had shied away from it in that moment, it would have worked against him. So instead, he worked with it. And I thought that was great to show his ability to scheme and plot right from the get-go, because he immediately read his tribe. He saw what was happening. And then he used that leadership role to his advantage, even though that was the last thing he wanted to do coming into this game. He didn't want to be a leader. Nobody wants to be a leader. But he did it, and he created the Kumbaya tribe.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, he took that role, and he basically had everything on lockdown at his original tribe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he noted in his day after video that for the first two votes, he was in control, and he wanted to keep order. And this goes back to what I mentioned earlier about him helping to make it taboo at that time to go looking for an idol. If you're firmly in command, the last thing you want is an idol to shake things up.
Mm-hmm.
And before the swap, he was definitely in a great position. He had an alliance with Libby, Michael, Jenna, and Stephanie, and also one with Laurel, James, and Donovan.
And he even mentioned Gonzalez in one of his exit interviews, that he had an alliance with her, which I thought was hysterical because
yeah.
I don't even know when that happened. The only person he seemed to not really connect with was Jacob.
And yeah, and I don't know how much he had time to even, but,
right.
you know, Laurel said on Twitter that while it didn't air, she considered Brendan to be one of her closest friends in the game. He was, as you mentioned, the Malolo leader. He kept them together despite their losing streak. He was also very close with Stephanie. And, you know, by having these tight bonds with people on both sides of the camp, he was able to keep a nice handle on things. And mention, you know, you mentioned Gonzalez because after she was voted out, she said in interviews that Brendan wanted to keep peace at the camp for now and didn't want people to really start playing yet. And you and I on this very podcast surmised, and I think we were definitely right, that Brendan was using his position as a leader at the time to keep himself and his allies safe.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on the outside, it looks like nobody is being allowed to play the game. But that was exactly the game he was playing.
Yes, it was fantastic. It was very Boston Rob-like.
Yeah.
I mean, it was definitely, when you can kind of create this world where everybody feels comfortable and safe, but at the same time, you're still in control and you're making everybody feel comfortable and safe by having that control, it's an incredible way to play the game. And I do think the swap really just took that all away from him, unfortunately.
Yeah. But before then, during his original tribe, when I wrapped up why Gonzalez and Jacob lost, I said the phrase that you loved. They were essentially out-strategized by the strategy to suppress strategy.
Yes.
And that was Brendan's strategy at his original tribe. Mm-hmm. But sometimes Survivor works in mysterious ways. And when Brendan was in charge before the swap, he wanted that calm and kumbaya. But he noted in his day after video that after the swap, he really needed chaos instead.
Yes. And he was so jealous of the other tribe. Poor Brendan.
Yeah, because because unfortunately for him, Bradley had a lot of Brendan's role within his own group and had things locked down in a very similar way, but now working against him, as you mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So, obviously it wouldn't have been quite as bad for him if he hadn't turned out to be the target. And we've already talked about how Brendan said in his interviews that he really did believe the Naviti were going after him. And I chalk that up to him having the ability to scheme and plot, because while Michael was fooled, Brendan noticed these little things, some of which, we've already mentioned that they were too strongly telegraphing. The Naviti would target Stephanie. I think you mentioned the story he told about how Kellen accidentally shed a tear for him when he said he wanted to still be playing on his birthday the following day.
Mm-hmm.
He picked up on those things. Michael did not.
And I think that really boils down to the age difference, because if you think about the two of those people, if you think about Michael and you think about Brendan and what they've each experienced in life, Michael is 18. So his interactions with people are certainly not what Brendan's have been. I think Brendan was 43, if I remember correctly. I don't remember.
I feel like 41.
Okay.
I could be wrong. But he's a youngin', who knows?
He is still a youngin'. But with growing up, you grow better, I guess, at being able to read people and being able to understand how people are responding. And I do think that his age was a benefit for him here, because he was dealing with people that were much younger than he was. And he walked in, and I'm going into a different rule, but he already had a plan about how to really play the emotional side of this. And someone like, he talked about Kellen, kind of was very empathetic and wore her emotions on her sleeve. And Brendan was able to read people very well in that way. And that's why I do think that sometimes, the longer you live, that life experience can really help you in this game. And that's why I think he was able to utilize that in the way that he did when he was strategizing, because he was really able to almost manipulate his ability to read people. And that's why he was so good at reading that room so quickly and reading the tribe so quickly. And then once the swap came, he realized, I need something different. And I do think that came with his experience in life.
Yeah, I agree. So I'll just close out the first rule by mentioning that, one thing Brendan specifically told Josh Wigler was that he was playing every second. And he said something similar in a week one web confessional, that he was constantly thinking about the game, whether it was who he was talking to, where he was. The game was running through his head at all times. And that is a great example of how to follow the first rule.
Mm-hmm.
So we move on to rule number two, which discusses how players need to avoid scheming and plotting too much and backstabbing too soon. I did not see anything from Brendan that seemed problematic here. Did you?
I didn't either. I had this weird issue with this rule when it related to Brendan, because I go back to the idol play. And I in my head, I just kept going back to scheming and plotting too much. And they schemed and plotted how to use the idol, but they schemed and plotted incorrectly. That was kind of what I kept going back to when I looked at this. And I'm like, I don't know if that makes any sense. But that was that was the only part of this that I really looked at. And I went, maybe that's where he kind of screwed up, because he really was very aware of the circumstances and what was happening. And it was done incorrectly. So So,
yeah, I wouldn't say that falls here. I think that falls back in the first rule that he just didn't push Michael hard enough.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the only thing that I would mention for this rule is something that you've already sort of gone into a little earlier, which is a corollary to this rule notes that if any alliances do get out into the open, don't let it be known that you are the decision maker, even to those within your own alliance, if possible. Mm. But like you said, it was clearly not possible for him from the get-go because, well, he didn't intend or want to be the leader, but he was,
right.
You know. And,
by default,
and,
yes.
Right. And so, you know, Gonzalez called him out as a lion leading to the sheep in the rest of her comment that we didn't get to hear after she was voted out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was basically announced to the whole tribe. But I still think he was doing fine, and it wasn't really a problem at that point. You know, it might have become one later if there hadn't been a swap or the swap had gone differently. But for the moment, he was, you know, at that moment, he was safe.
And even when Gonzalez said that, people went back to camp and still didn't realize she was talking about him. So he was ecstatic that he was still, people still were not understanding what he was doing. So it's an incredibly impressive way to play the game, for sure, that people weren't even when they were being told point blank, hey, you know, this is what's happening, they still were confused. So good for him. But not good for him this week.
Yeah, well, yeah, but she should have hung around a little longer and said, okay, and in case you don't get what I'm saying,
right,
Brendan is the lion, okay?
Let me be very clear.
Yeah.
That was great.
All right, so moving to the third rule, it tells players they need to be flexible. Now, we've already discussed how Brendan had two different alliances, at least, going on in the original Malolo, so, you know, he didn't have to worry about being targeted at that point. What do you think about his flexibility once the tribes swapped?
I do think that he did well in being flexible when he was playing this game to a certain degree. Before the swap, and I know you've asked me about after the swap, I think he was better at his flexibility. But I think once he hit the swap, it was almost really hard for him to be more flexible because of the situation. But I don't know how much, I mean, he did say it was very hard for them to get one-on-one time with the Navidi Five because of the way Bradley was kind of controlling everyone. And perhaps he's now dealing with someone who's similar to himself in that regard, as you've already stated. Bradley was kind of putting everyone on lockdown the same way that he was, the same way Brendan was. And so I think the flexibility in his game became almost impossible once the swap happened.
Yes. Now, you say almost. Brendan mentioned in one interview that I saw, and he also said something to me on Twitter about it, that Kellen came to him on the last day and gave him an opportunity to flip to their side. But he thought that if he flipped, he would alienate all of his old allies and be at the bottom of his new supposed allies.
I did read that. Now that you've mentioned it that way, I remember him saying that because he was not only worried about the tribe that was with him, but those were that were still
right.
On. Yes, I do remember reading that now. Yes.
Yeah. So he said he might have made it three more days, presuming her offer was genuine, mm-hmm. of course, but he never could have won. And I certainly understand that. But it makes me wonder, okay, could he have played a role and pretended to be with Kellen, even if just leading up to, you know, this one vote? So, you know, the Naviti probably wouldn't have been dumb enough to tell him who the real target would be.
Mm-hmm.
But if Kellen wasn't lying to him, then at least the chance of placing the idol correctly would have increased from 25% to 33%.
Right.
And more, you know, most importantly for him, again, if she wasn't lying to him, he would have been safe for that vote. You know, I think he even said in some of his interviews that making it through just one more tribal council can sometimes change the whole game. So maybe bluffing Kellen was the move to attempt. If he succeeds, it's 4-4 in that tribe, and he's the hero of the Malolo.
Mm-hmm.
If he fails, he's caught and would probably be targeted next. But, I mean, obviously that's not worse than the way things ended up.
Right, that's true.
So, you know, yeah, it's a convoluted plan, but I think he should have given it a shot.
Well, you've got to do something at that point. You definitely do. He did in one of his interviews with ET Canada talk about that the hardest thing to do is balance playing for tomorrow versus playing to win. And if you go too much on the side of looking down the road, you're not going to be around tomorrow. If you look too much at what you can do to be here tomorrow, you may not get to the end and have a chance to win. So he was probably, I mean, clearly struggling with that idea. But sometimes, you know, we're not that far into the game. We are, but we're not. We're 12 days in. There's enough time to really kind of fix things as the game moves forward. And if you're looking at the possibility of going home versus the possibility of sticking around and trying to flub a little bit and trying to make something work like that, I think people would understand it as a great way to play the game, because you sometimes do have to just look at tomorrow, and you can't necessarily look long term. But after you look at tomorrow, then you have to look long term. So I do think he was struggling with that idea a lot.
Yeah. It makes me wonder if he had seen Triple H last season and seen Ben go undercover. I wonder if it might have occurred to him, hey, I can go undercover before, you know, leading up to this one vote, say I'm flipping and then not.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That is true.
So
we'll never know, I guess.
No, we won't. So with that, we move on to the fourth rule, which tells players to not let their emotions control them. Now, you had already mentioned that a little bit, but the only thing I could think of originally was that, according to Gonzalez, Brendan let his emotions get to him when Donathan played on them before the first vote, causing Brendan to switch away from targeting Donathan and to Gonzalez instead.
Yeah, but
that was,
I don't know,
that
about
was from
that.
Her point of view. Right. Then we hear Brendan in his interviews that Donathan was never actually on the chopping block.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was just something they told her.
Right.
It was going to be Jenna or Gonzalez. So emotions played no role in that decision after all.
Yeah.
With that in mind, I don't think he had any problems here. What about you?
Oh, I don't think he had any problems either. And this is the one that I had mentioned previously, this component of the rules, that in pregame, he actually did say that I can divorce myself of emotion to do what needs to be done out there. So I think he was very aware of that fact. And that's why earlier when I was talking about his ability to read people, and he mentioned specifically how Kellen wore her emotions on her sleeve. So I think he went into the game with the mindset of keeping his emotions in check, but paying attention to other people's emotions as the game was being played. So I think I didn't see any problems here at all, because I think it was something he was consciously deciding to do before he even started.
Yeah, I agree. And I think if we look at what he has said about who was probably going to be the next one to go if there had been no swap, you know, even though he, you know, was very good with Stephanie and they ended up, you know, bonding together even closer when the swap happened, but he was looking at probably voting her out next on the original Malolo, even though they got along really well.
Right.
Because that was the best strategic move for him.
Right.
So, all right. So moving to the fifth rule, once again, I think Brendan did pretty well in terms of this rule, which says to pretend to be nice and play the social game. And, you know, I was just talking about how he had all these, you know, good social relationships. In the first rule, we talked about how close he was with several other players on his original tribe. And I think that was both in terms of strategy and as friends. So once again, I think he did a good job here.
Yeah, and I don't think he needs to pretend either. He's one of those people who is just a genuinely nice person. And it was clear, I think, in pregame to a lot of people that that's the way he was going to be. Words like loyalty, integrity, great asset for any tribe, that he was going to play an honest game. Even Kellen said that if she had to vote to give someone $1 million, it would be him. So clearly, you know, people were reading him as being a nice individual. So I don't think that he needed to pretend. I do think that he played the social game exceptionally well, considering he was able to make connections with everybody on his original tribe. The way that he was able to maintain everyone on his original tribe, it was that we've already spoke of in his kumbaya atmosphere that he created. So clearly he was doing a phenomenal job with this role.
Yeah, I agree. Now, one of the things you said, what did you say? Great asset? Wait, what was that?
What?
He was a great asset.
Yeah, is that
okay.
what I said?
I just wanted to make sure. I just wanted to make sure.
That's what someone said. He was a great asset for any tribe.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe they were complimenting something
Listen,
else.
Listen, okay. I would be complimenting his abs. Let me tell you.
Oh,
wow.
Okay.
Wow. I'm impressed.
All right.
You made me do it.
We'll move on to the sixth rule, which warns players against being too much of a threat. And I'd say we definitely have an interesting situation here because on the one hand, yeah, he was a threat. But on the other hand, it's not clear if that contributed to him being voted out at this point.
Yeah.
So, you know, to start with the first part, Jeff Probst said in an interview after week one, Brendan is a legit threat. He's gifted. He can answer a question in a way that keeps him safe, but lets other people know he's still strong. He's complimentary to other people. He seems like a natural leader. That seems to go along with what we saw on the show, right?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
But I also think he did a good job of walking a tightrope. In the second tribal council, which you already mentioned, he specifically downplayed strength as a key factor. And in a week one web confessional, he acknowledged that he's looked at as a leader, but a trusted leader.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said in several interviews that despite being that leader, he doesn't think that made him a threat in the early days and felt it was actually good. It put him in a good position, which, you know, was great and wonderful when he had his tribe on lockdown. I think the question is what happened in the post-swap transition.
Bradley happened.
Yes. Well,
that's what happened.
That's exactly it. You know, and that's where it starts to get tricky to interpret because we saw Bradley say two different sides of Bradley, really. So one hand, he said, Brendan is not dangerous. He's docile. He's annoying. Now, that doesn't sound like Bradley exactly considered him a threat. And Brendan himself said in interviews that even when he was voted out, he doesn't believe it was because he'd been the leader of the original tribe several days earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But Bradley also said in confessional that Brendan was an option for being voted out because he likes to play the leader role. And this is the now infamous quote. He's like a dad who gives terrible pep talks,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. He can lead people because the leader never wins. So where does that leave us?
Bradley wanted to be in charge.
Okay, so that's kind of where I'm looking too, because I mean, we're basically trying to do some mind reading.
Yeah, because if you look at the people that you're dealing with, and someone like Bradley, who is starting to realize that he's got the Navidi Five on a tight lockdown, but he also realizes that Brendan is someone who's extremely likable, someone who people have gravitated towards on his other tribe. They chose him as the leader, and someone like Brendan could potentially sway people. And someone who's dealing with Bradley, who might think Bradley is annoying and might think Bradley is, you know, complaining too much, might start leaning towards.
I don't know who would ever say that.
I can't imagine. If you look at Twitter, you might see some people say it. But I do think for Bradley, looking at his game, that's when Brendan becomes a threat. Because if you have someone who is not only likable, but is charismatic and is able to make people follow in his direction, he could potentially start pulling your numbers away from you. So I think that if you look at the situation out of that four, who is most likely to ruin things for Bradley? And that would be Brendan.
Yeah, I mean, I am not 100% sure of that. You know, I feel like I just don't know. And, you know, I have this feeling one of us will hear from Bradley that we're wrong, especially if you saw the tweet that he posted on Saturday.
I did.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
my.
Anyway, but I'm not sure if Bradley was so much threatened by Brendan as much as I think Brendan's leadership skills just kind of seem to piss Bradley off. And I'm not really sure why. I mean, maybe he was mistreated by PE teachers and coaches when he was younger. You know, maybe he thought Brendan's pep talks were too corny. I don't know. Maybe it's none of these things. And they just picked the person who was the obvious leader because of that double bluff strategy I was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
They knew Brendan was the most obvious target. and therefore Malolo would think they'd target someone else, so therefore they targeted Brendan. And, you know, it's possible that being a threat contributed, but I just don't think we can say for sure one way or the other without actually hearing from the Naviti, because right now we've heard from Bradley, but we heard two very different things from him.
Right, that is true. I don't know.
So, yeah, that will have to remain a mystery until we're corrected on Twitter.
That's true. We will be corrected, too. Bring it on, Twitter people. Let's see. Let's see how we did.
Oh, never call out the Twitter people.
I know. I love the Twitter people. So, no, it's all quite fun because we really don't know. And that's why we kind of go through all of this in the process that we do and read the various interviews and watch videos and try to put it all together. But we really don't know because we're not there. And that's why it is nice when we are contacted by the players after the fact and they correct us or they say, hey, yeah, it was like you were in my head. You know, all of that stuff is really great to hear because we don't know because we're not there.
Yeah, we don't want to hear the correction part. We just want to hear, yeah, you did a great job.
You want to hear, David, you're right.
Exactly.
That's what you want to hear.
And Jessica, you're right.
I know, so. But the David, you're right, we actually have a soundbite for that we need start including, I think. It really needs to happen.
All right, so we move on from the main rules to Appendix A. And the key to this appendix is to make your votes count and keep your end goal in mind. And typically, at this point, players should still be voting out the week and trying to avoid going back to tribal council. But as I already mentioned, the original Naviti probably don't care about going back to tribal council because they can just, you know, keep on pagonging the remaining Malolo. And that's especially true now that they flushed an idol because, I mean, let's face it, it's very likely that if the Malolo had another idol already, it would have been used at the same time during that tribal council. Mm-hmm. And so, as always, strategy takes precedence over strength or weakness when it's time to evaluate how to keep their end goals in mind. The end goals of the original Naviti were to stay strong internally and get rid of Malolos. So, you know, in many ways, it's actually better for them to lose challenges because they know they have a solid majority on their tribe. And at this point, they have no idea what's going on at that other tribe.
Right.
Because it certainly wasn't going the way they thought it was going to go.
Right. And Desiree was excited about going to tribal council. She was happy they lost because she was kind of like, it doesn't matter. I'm safe. And I want to vote people off. So there definitely was an idea in all of the Naviti's mind that tribal council is not that bad because it's not going to be one of us. And they were all very set in that decision. And they were targeting at the Malolos. They're going to pagong them. They definitely are, unfortunately.
Yeah, now, you know, Desiree is lucky. I mean, you never say, I'm excited to go to tribal council.
Oh,
I'm sorry. That is absolutely a way to just get. I mean, if she was looking to make sure that she, you know, got that confessional shown on TV, you know, but with only a 5-4 majority. Oh, I would never say I'm excited to go.
Well, she also called herself LeBron James. So she's very proud. That's fine.
Yes.
But she was excited to go to tribal council.
All right. So we're coming to the end here for Brendan. But before I sum up my conclusions, do you have any other final thoughts about him?
Well, I did think that he had a very interesting read on this season in one of his interviews. He had expressed that he thinks this season is a bit of an aberration where you have four people who are pretty savvy and strong players that went out really early. Maybe it's just a new era of Survivor. And I thought that was quite interesting because I do think that we're seeing much different gameplay as every season progresses. But in this season, particularly, each person that's been voted out has, except maybe Jacob. And I say that because his edit was showing that he was definitely doing things to upset people early on, like looking for idols and making him more of a target. But he was also someone who was a winner pick for many people, not just myself. You had people like Stephanie Gonzalez, where people were shocked. Rob Cesarino was very surprised that she had gone out so early. And, you know, your winner pick, Brendan, goes out this week. He was a winner pick for many people, including Dalton Ross. And Morgan was someone who Jeff Probst, even at the beginning of this episode, said that she was a huge threat and she got voted out. So I think that perhaps the players are looking at the other players in a different way. And Brendan is one of those people that, as you thought he was a great winner pick, I thought he was a great option as well, even though I didn't choose him. He really was doing a phenomenal job playing the game. He was doing things that you would expect a player to do, and he was doing them very well. He was able to maintain relationships. He was able to control those relationships. He was able to control an entire tribe. But the swap happened, and that's where the other elements of Survivor are no longer in your control. You can only control so much, and he clearly can't control a swap. And once that happened, I do think chaos was exactly what he needed in order to stay in this game. And unfortunately, he was dealing with a group of people that were approaching the game in the same manner that he was, with a lot of control. And the control was not in his favor anymore. And unfortunately, Brendan went home. And I think he would have been so great in a final three. He would have been so much fun to listen to because his interviews were so much fun to read. So I could only imagine how well he would have done sitting in a final three. It would have been good to watch.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, from my standpoint, near the beginning of the podcast, I mentioned what Jeff Probst said. You know, Brendan didn't do anything wrong. He just ended up on the wrong side of the numbers. So after talking through everything, do I agree or disagree? Well, I'm going to say I mostly agree. But anyone who's listened to this podcast for long enough or read my earlier columns knows that there's almost always something that could have been done differently. We saw a couple things as we went through the rules. The more complicated and shorter term fix would have been to consider pretending to flip with Kellen. As I discussed, Brendan would have had to convince Kellen that he was with them. She would have had to have been telling the truth, which we don't know. And then he would have had to vote with his original Malolos. It's possible he would have gotten only one more week of safety, but it could have turned into something. The other thing that I really do believe he needed to do was to find a way to convince Michael to use the idol on Brendan. All the pieces of the puzzle were there, and Brendan figured them out. He knew he was the target. He had a very close ally with an idol, but he didn't or couldn't convince the ally to use the idol on him. Doing so would have turned the tide of the game for him. Not only would he have been safe, but Bradley would have been gone. And then Navidi would have lost one of their apparent leaders while being tied 4-4 on the new Malolo tribe. Brendan played a good strategic game and had his situation flipped upside down at the swap. He went from controlling his tribe and having everyone on lockdown to being in the minority and lockdown himself. He was the most obvious target, which would often have made it least likely that he'd actually be targeted. Just last week, I said Morgan was the least likely target, which made her the best target. This week, one more level was added by the double bluff, and the most likely target became the least likely, which made him the most likely.
If that was Brendan great.
If Brendan could have persuaded Michael that his read was right and the idol should be used on him, it would have been a great moment of outthinking the opposition. But he didn't, and that is why Brendan lost.
You need to start putting these on t-shirts.
Yeah.
These are great. These are great quotes.
But they'd be so long. I mean, could you imagine how long that t-shirt quote would
be?
Yeah,
but just that one about the most likely, least likely. But that was great. That was really good. Yeah. And this,
I already confused people with the weak, then the strong, and the weak, then the strong.
I know.
Could you imagine the most likely, then the least likely, then the most likely?
And then throw the strategizing one on top of it. It would be
That's
great.
Right. That's right. Maybe we'll sell hats or something. Well, hats would be even smaller.
That would be fun.
All right. Before we get to our predictions, I do want to remind everyone about the RHAP Patreon program. Because remember earlier when I talked about a discussion in the RHAP patron Facebook group regarding the best way to play the idol? Well, listeners who aren't already patrons can get into that Facebook group so that they can participate as well and talk to both of us and other RHAP personalities, not to mention, of course, all the other patrons. By going to robhasawebsite.com/patron. And obviously, that's not the only perk of being a patron. Rob does special podcasts. He does special videos just for patrons. Patrons get first access to tickets for live shows like the upcoming Know It Alls in Boston, which was almost sold out before it was even announced to the public. And patrons get discounts to those events as well. There are a bunch of other perks, too. So check out all the possibilities at robhasawebsite.com/patron. And after you become a patron and get to the Facebook group, make sure to say hello to us there.
Yes.
So, predictions. You're being consistent with your eight ball strategy.
Which didn't work.
Well.
But I'm going back to
twice it. Twice in a row. Well, you know, I mean, speaking of not working, twice in a row, I predicted that Chris would be voted out.
Yes. And you know what I was thinking? Chris is going to go home just because you're not going to pick him this week.
Aha. But that makes him the least likely target, which makes him the most likely for me to pick him. So I've been foiled twice in a row. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because first was that damn rock draw.
Yes.
Then second was that comeback, that amazing comeback.
That was ridiculous.
Yes. But if that comeback hadn't happened, you know, we saw Laurel and Donathan not wanting to turn on Wendell and Dominic, and especially not wanting to keep Chris around. So, you know, that part all played well into what I figured would happen if Naviti lost immunity. So, you know, looking ahead, there was that preview that made it seem like Donathan would be caught in the middle. No, I don't think so. I think he'll still go against Chris if it comes down to it. But of course, it's possible that Malolo could lose immunity again, especially after voting out one of their strongest competitors. If that happens, well, we've already pretty much talked about it. The pogonging will continue. I don't think they'll target Michael since they already got rid of Brendan. But, you know, who knows? Bradley may want to go after Stephanie because she made some comments that maybe he didn't like. But I really do think Naviti will lose. In part, it's because of a press photo that has been released showing Kellen and Bradley doing the puzzle portion of a challenge against Dominic and James. Now, obviously, I don't know if it's reward or immunity, but if it's immunity, that's pretty close to a guaranteed win. Sorry, James and Dominic, but, you know, it's true. So I'm going to stay consistent. I'm going to go with the least likely, who will be the most likely, and say it will be Chris, who is voted out.
I love
it.
And
one of these days, I'm going
to
be right.
One of these days, you're going to be right. And this is why I have to say my Magic 8 Ball is so much more fun. Because if you know, I don't know if you do know, but one of the options or one of the answers is most likely. And I'm not even kidding when I tell you, when I asked it about Chris, it said most likely. I swear to God. So
does that make him least likely then? No, I don't understand.
Well, but here's my thought process with the Magic 8 Ball. I can't just randomly ask it questions without having some basis for it. And I did have.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to violate the rules of Magic 8 Ball.
Exactly. Etiquette. Well, you have to have some reason to think someone might be going home. And there was three people that I considered were possible targets this week. And Bradley was one of them just because we've spent a lot of time talking about Bradley and I don't know if people are going to be angry with him because he's had some attitude. But when I asked the Magic 8 Ball about Bradley, it flat out said no. So I'm like, all right, Bradley's out of the equation. But the other two people that I was thinking,
it just didn't want him to complain about it.
It was Chris, because I do agree with your assessment. He's in a bad situation, and it's very clear that people don't all want to work with him. So there's some issues for Chris. So when I asked about Chris, it was most likely. But then if we look at the other tribe, aside from Bradley, I also have some concerns for Stephanie Johnston. I love Stephanie. I think she's fantastic. But the issue I have, or the concern I have, also relates to a press photo that shows the tribe returning. I don't know if it's from a reward challenge or immunity, but there's one person mysteriously absent from the photo, and it's Stephanie Johnston. Maybe she, I just think it was interesting. They're walking. You don't see her in line. And I thought, I don't know, maybe that means she ends up on Ghost Island. If she ends up on Ghost Island, that's less time that she can spend with people in her tribe if it's just after a reward. So, because if they do it the same way they did it this past week, it was just after the reward and not immunity, which means she's coming back with the immunity challenge. And that's going to give Jenna some time to hang out with Sebastian, as we saw from the preview. And
ooh la la.
That seems to be her buddy. That's Stephanie Johnson's buddy is Jenna. But if Jenna starts gravitating towards Sebastian and they have to pick someone from the remaining group, I don't feel like Michael is going to be a threat to them strategically or to Bradley strategically. He just more is he's a strength. He's strong. But I think the thinker of that group was Brendan, and he's gone. Who's the next thinker in that group? It's Stephanie Johnson, who's going to be a threat to Bradley. So when I asked about Stephanie Johnson, my magic eight ball said without a doubt she was going home. That's what it said.
Yeah, well, I have a doubt. I don't see Jenna turning on her. I mean, from all the things that Brendan said, you know, those two are thick as thieves, Jenna and Stephanie, because remember that Brendan was considering not Donathan or Gonzalez for that first vote, but Jenna or Gonzalez for the first vote. But then he realized if they voted out Jenna, that Stephanie would wreak havoc on the camp afterwards.
Oh, right.
Afterwards.
And I remember that. And I took that into consideration because I was thinking to myself, wouldn't it be interesting if Jenna basically got saved because of the relationship she had with Stephanie Johnson? And what if Jenna doesn't reciprocate that? What if Jenna's thought process is, well, if it's going to come down to one of us three, and if it's not me, well, then I'm still in the game. Not that she's necessarily going to turn on Stephanie. She doesn't even need to turn on Stephanie because they have the numbers in their favor. But if you have to pick who out of that three is going to go home next, she's the most likely, I think, out of that three that would be voted for.
Doesn't that make her the least likely?
True. Most likely becomes the least likely. But I have my fear for her. I do think that Chris is in hot water, but I just think out of that three, she is the one who is in the most trouble out of that three on that tribe.
Out of that three, I would think Michael probably is, but that's just a gut feeling there. But I still think Chris is still my official pick.
So and we'll he see. Will be until he goes home. So then you can say,
exactly.
I was right.
That's right. I was right one out of 10 times or whatever, you know. So, all right. So we need a hashtag. And I'm pretty sure, even though it's long, it has to be least likely as most likely.
I like it. I like it. Least likely is most likely. Mm-hmm.
And of course, we have the hashtag for this podcast overall, which is hashtag YXLost.
Yes.
All right. So as we wrap up, listeners should remember to subscribe to all of the RHAP Survivor podcasts by going to robhasapodcast.com/survivor. We are also on the reality TV Rehapups feed, so you can subscribe that way as well. Between those two places, you will find tons of great content, the know-it-alls, the wiggle room, the recap show, the voicemails, the B&B, you name it, it's there. And also, just wanted to let people know, if you're buying anything on Amazon, make sure to head over to the RHAP Amazon page at www.amazon.com/shop/RHAP. And, you know, you'll find a bunch of specific items related to the show there, like a tub of banana Laffy Taffy. And yes, a magic eight ball is there too.
That's amazing.
So, well, you know, I mean, that's, you know, Rob used it. So.
I know. It's a good thing to have because we're just that's guessing. Right. So let's have some help from the magic eight ball.
So even if the particular item you want isn't there, if for some reason you don't want a tub of banana Laffy Taffy, you can start there and go to do the rest of your Amazon shopping and help support RHAP. Also, just wanted to remind people that besides talking to the two of us in the patron Facebook group, if you're a patron, you can follow Jessica on Twitter at JessicaLewis89, and I am at David Bloomberg. And as always, make sure to follow both of us to get the entire conversation throughout the week.
Absolutely.
As we wrap things up, thanks to Scott St. Pierre, who does all the editing on the Why Blank Lost podcasts. Thank you, as always, to Will from America for the theme song. And of course, the biggest thanks to you, Jessica, for this wonderful episode.
Thank you so much, David Bloomberg. And thank you as well. I do sit here as you speak, nodding quite profusely. So believe me when I say David is right. Most of the time.
You will not get any argument from me.
No, so, I will not.
With that, we will see everyone in a week. Bye.
Bye.
Jessica will turn it around. They'll break down the rules and they'll show you how. You played yourself and got voted out. This is why blank lost. And this is why blank lost. Oh baby, this is why blank lost.